Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Backmarker Podcast. My name is Raj.
My name is Brayden. What a race, Raj.
What a race indeed, man. That was awesome.
That is right. The Canadian Grand Prix was just happened this weekend, and I got to say, one of the best races I've seen this season, but potentially ever.
What did I tell you, man? Montreal never disappoints.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happening. We're going to go through that in the race review. Do you want to just get straight into that?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Raj, quickly before we get into the race, what did you watch of either qualifying or practice? Any notes you have from those?
I watched qualifying, obviously, but yeah, not really in any notes from that. Besides, it looks like Red Bull may be getting a little closer in Qualitrim.
Yeah.
Which is obviously good to see. But yeah, as I predicted, really strong resurgence from the Mercedes team.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get into that now.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. I mean, the Red Bull cars, they qualified exactly where I thought, but the times were up there, a lot closer to what we would have wanted last year, or what we saw last year, rather. On a track I didn't think they were going to do that well in. Like, it's not super aerodynamically, you know, beneficial to them to race in Montreal compared to some other places, but it worked well enough for them.
It did, and that's the really odd thing. It seems like whenever they get to Montreal, it's when a lot of their upgrades are actually coming out and seem to be taking hold.
Yeah.
Red Bull always seems to start crap, and by Montreal, they seem to have some pace.
Yeah.
Ricciardo won his first race at Montreal. So, you know, Red Bull does good things over there, even though it is a power circuit.
Yeah, I heard Ricciardo has never won in his first four races. I actually thought it was maybe he's never even podiumed in the first four races of the season. That says something about Red Bull's like start to each year, even on the years they do well. Even back in like the Vettel Webber days, like although they were doing a lot better, the first four or five races were always slow starts. The only notes I have from practice, I didn't catch the whole lot, but Daniel Kvyat, FP1, lap one, broken down. That pretty much summed up his weekend from the get-go. And as soon as Alonso comes back to F1, he broke down in FP1 as well. Not quite as early, but only after a few laps. So McLaren, once again, not a great weekend for them. The qualifying, of course, I'll just quickly go through the order. Hamilton was on pole, which I think we both predicted. Let me just check our predictions.
No. Didn't? Wait, I said Vettel. No, we both said Vettel was going to be on
pole. Did we both say Vettel was on pole?
I think so, but check.
I'm checking now. Where's my notes here? That's last week's. Yeah, you said Vettel, I said Vettel. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Neither of us got that right. Vettel, of course, putting himself on the front row in second. Then we got Bottas, Raikkonen, Verstappen, Ricciardo, Massa, Perez, Ocon, Hülkenberg. I won't go bother going through the whole thing other than to say Wehrlein started from the pits. Just really quickly, this brought up Hamilton's tied for the most amount of, not the most amount of podiums, rather, the same as Senna. At this point.
Pole positions.
Pole positions at Senna, yes. Yep. So I've got this little clip here, of course. He was presented by the Senna Family Trust with one of his race helmet Senna's. So that's really quite awesome. I want to just play this little bit of footage. It's quite an emotional one from Hamilton.
From your hero to you.
A lot of cheering there, obviously. That is a really cool helmet.
It is a really cool helmet.
Pretty special there for Hamilton. I'll skip over his actual reaction because it's just a lot of, I don't know what to say, this is amazing. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty special moment. Good on also the Senna family, but also Formula One for kind of, I guess they probably organized that or helped organize that a little bit.
Yeah.
To be happening interviews on the grid after qualifying, such a good idea.
It is. It's awesome seeing Liberty open everything up. It's really appreciating.
Makes so much sense. Anyway, do you want to get straight into the actual race?
Let's do the race.
Yeah, so as I said, those were the starting positions. On the formation lap, however, Daniel Kvyat doesn't even start. He's stranded on the grid. So he was starting in 11th. He is now meant to start either from the pits or at the very back. What is it, Raj? I don't quite understand the rules. You're not allowed to make up positions on the formation lap.
You're not allowed to make up positions, but yes, you can start from the grid.
Okay, just from the last, if there's a spot for you. What if there's not a spot for you?
Why wouldn't there be a spot for you?
Because there's 20 cars and they're all taken, potentially.
But you're one of the 20.
Oh, so everyone moves up one. Everyone's allowed to move up one?
Oh, wait, no, I see.
You know what I mean?
Because they're not allowed to take the empty grid spot.
Because that would mess everyone up. You'd have to swap to the other side of the grid. No one's prepared for that. So Is there a spot from at the end, or was he meant to have started from the pits?
You know, if there's no grid spots, he would have to start from the pit lane. Mm. So, to be honest, I'm not sure.
Technically, there would have been a spot because Wehrlein started from the pits, but I think he was meant to start from the pits, and he didn't, which means a few laps from now, we're going to find out that he gets in a bit of trouble for this.
Yes.
Making up spots in the formation lap, which he definitely shouldn't have. I didn't actually see him do it, but apparently he did. That's why he got his first penalty of a couple, but we'll get into that. Lights go off. Lights on. How does it work? Lights go off. Canadian Grand Prix is a go. Go down turn one, and already Verstappen has moved up from fifth to second.
It was a crazy dive. Hey?
Yeah. Neither of the Ferraris got off the line that well.
No.
So Vettel dropped back. Raikkonen dropped back quite a bit as well. Ricciardo had a decent start, but yeah, Verstappen was really the highlight of that
one. It was an awesome start from Verstappen. Some very tactical overtaking as well. And, of course, what I mean by that is he hurt Vettel, and that made me happy.
Yeah, so he did take off the front right of his
pretty much front the entire end, front right of the front wing.
Didn't totally come off, but became very loose and does fly off a little bit later. As we go down into lap one, there's a big crash. Carlos Sainz flies backwards, gearbox first, into Felipe Massa.
Yeah, that incident was very un-Sainz-like. I thought it was a bit amateurish. Mm. I think he was driving very... like hyperactively almost, like diving from one side of the track to the other.
Mm.
And he said, he actually have a quote from him. He says, he apologized to everybody. The car was in my blind spot. I just didn't see him there.
Yeah, so he was actually apologizing to Grosjean
there. To Grosjean, yeah.
So
yes.
Grosjean's coming up on his right-hand side. Sainz is just sort of going all over the place and squeezes Grosjean into a position where he shouldn't be. Definitely Sainz's fault. If Grosjean wasn't there, it would have been fine, but he squeezed, Grosjean tapped him, he spins, flies, and unfortunately Massa takes the gearbox to the side of the car, which if you see the whole replay, Massa kind of got caught up in this weird little thing. He shouldn't have been in that exact spot.
Yeah, no, I know that.
It's just like such an unfortunate turn of events
really
for him.
It's really unfortunate to be on that piece of road, but if he wasn't, someone else probably would have been.
Yeah.
So
Alonso just misses out on getting hit. He goes onto the grass to avoid it, but yeah, Massa and Sainz's race out already. They are both done. Grosjean survives, but he's lost his front wing. So when the safety car comes out, he dives into the pits immediately to swap his front wing, and the incident is under investigation, which could potentially lead to penalties later. We don't know yet. Nothing's been announced yet. So they might get away with it. Might be a racing incident. I'd like to see it. I'd put that down as a racing incident. A bad one, but Sainz wasn't... I don't know. I don't think he deserves much of a punishment if he's going to get one.
Yeah, it kind of is a racing incident. He clearly couldn't see him there. He was in the blind spot. But my take on it is this. Why are you diving from one side of the track to the other on lap one?
Yeah, there's
it's
too many cars around.
It's a very risky thing to do. Like, even if you know, especially if you can't see into your blind spot, don't just dive from one end of the track to the other.
Yeah.
You're going to hit something, and he did. And I don't think he's going to be making a mistake like that in the future.
No,
he's too good a driver to do it again.
I think Alonso summed it up well. He goes, what are they doing? A crazy start. They need to calm down. Alonso just saw it happen. He goes, man, they need to calm down, which is 100% what needed to happen. Wehrlein also pits. Nothing noteworthy. He's way back, so he's just trying to change up his strategy, get off everyone else's. The safety car eventually comes in after a couple of laps. Hamilton immediately puts his foot down on the back straight. Verstappen tries for a little bit of attack on the final chicane, doesn't get it. And then from there on out, Hamilton whizzes out to the front and basically stays there for the rest of the race. Spoiler alert, he will win this one. But we've got a lot more action. Like, I kind of saw it coming even from this early stage.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, please don't make this a boring, like, formation race. But it wasn't. Heaps of stuff happens. Shortly after the safety car comes in, we see Vettel's front wing, pretty significantly damaged. I don't know how they didn't notice that during the safety car period.
Yeah, or maybe they were trying to see if he had, you know, if he could drive
last
through it.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I saw the replay of Verstappen's overtake, I saw the wobbly bit of front wing.
Yeah, either they didn't see it, which just sounds idiotic.
If I can see it, I should be on the Ferrari pit wall.
They have, like, cameras, right?
They have more than we do, and I saw it immediately. Cameras. I don't understand why they didn't pull him in during the safety car period. It would have been better. He goes into the pits to get it repaired, probably because it's pretty dangerous at this point, and it does fly off.
Dude,
eventually.
It was a lot. Like, you can imagine, basically, he was missing half of his front downforce. That would have been horrible to drive.
Driving a shopping trolley.
And I'm with you. I don't get why they didn't pit him straight away.
Yeah.
I don't.
They waited until it got to the point where they had to, as opposed to the point where it would have been convenient.
Yeah.
Safety car was there. They should have taken that opportunity, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Not
a great weekend for the Red Boys through and through. Really.
Not really. I mean, they make up for it a little bit, but anyway. Lap 10, Hamilton is already 3.4 seconds clear of Verstappen. The race is now going on behind him. He's just managing his pace up front, and he's managing the tyres on the ultra softs very, very well. Pretty clear after 10 laps, he's not going to be much of a problem.
And pretty clear that they fix their setup issues. He can drive those ultra softs pretty much as well as anybody now, which kind of scares me for the rest of the season. I really hope Ferrari and Mercedes are gonna stay together.
Yeah, I don't want that issue to be totally resolved. I'd like maybe some races they get it together, but I don't want them to be like, oh, we fixed it, we're all good now, we're the best again.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like that though, which is scary.
Yeah, scary. Hopefully it's just Canada specific, I guess.
Canada specific.
I almost said Canada. I corrected myself. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, anyway, lap 18. Something disappointing happens on lap 18.
Lap 18, you've skipped ahead.
I have skipped ahead, but there's too much, man.
Is this the Verstappen incident?
This is Verstappen.
Yeah,
this
okay.
is Verstappen coming second, and to be honest, looking like he might have had a chance to threaten in the pits, and his essentially the battery, the energy store in his power unit just decided to cock it. Like, it literally sounded like
driving. He's just like nothing.
Yep, and he was not happy.
No.
At all.
He almost looks like he recovered it. Like, he kind of sensed that something was wrong. And he's like, oh, nah, it's dead. It's like when you start your car and you're like, it's gone.
Yeah. Well, you just hear this boom, and that's it. And then silence.
Exactly. The only other thing I'd note is Kvyat's parade lap or formation lap as he's moved up is under investigation. So they're looking into how the hell he's already back into like 10th or 9th after potentially having meant to start from the pit lane. They kind of realize, wait a minute, he's not that good. There's no way he weaved his way through 10 cars after about 12 or 14 laps or so. So they're already looking into that. Virtual safety car comes out to get Verstappen's car out of the way because it's in a very inconvenient spot. There's no real runoffs in Canada. You're on an island. There's water to one side and trees to the other. There's not that many ways you can get a car off the track.
And it's a closed circuit. It's mostly walled in.
So this leads to my favorite footage ever, which is three separate marshals falling over in the attempt to get his car out of the way.
I don't understand why they can't stand up. Did you see, like, they've fallen over every day of the weekend?
I don't know what's with the marshals there in Canada, but the same dude fell over twice. He fell over, got up, fell over again. And then another guy went to help him get up and fell over again. Oh, man.
Why?
I'm going to see if I can find that footage for the show notes because that was one of my favorite clips. I had to rewind that during the race to watch it again.
And they're some of the most skilled marshals in the calendar. That's the really odd thing.
They're getting trained on how to move a car, not how to walk, Raj. I mean, give them a break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe they should go through a walking masterclass before they, you know, go into their marshalling classes. Just saying.
anyway, Kvyat now gets a drive-through penalty for his starting from the wrong grid place after his formation lap fail. So pretty much in trouble from the get-go here. We're only up to lap like 20 and he's been given a drive-through penalty.
That's his weekend pretty much done.
Yeah. Not over for him though. We'll see.
No, not over, but done.
Basically, everything's sort of falling into place. Stroll and Magnussen are having a bit of a battle around for 8th place. Stroll, let's just quickly go. Yeah,
let's actually talk about Stroll.
Stroll from the get-go was looking a lot more racy.
He was looking a lot more racy. He was looking a lot more calm and composed. And I was so impressed with that kid. I've ripped him to pieces many, many times in the past. But I've got to tell you, Stroll in traffic was magical. He was acting very maturely. He wasn't really pulling any stupid moves, and when he would brake harder and pull out of it.
Yeah,
he was really using his brain, and it does pay off for him.
I mean, he went two wide, and I think at one point he went three wide. Really no stupid moves, and he could have made them. Like, I was expecting at any moment he was just going to fly into the back of one of these guys he was battling with, and he always kept his cool.
To be honest, he kind of had already made two of those moves when he did back out, but fine. Back out from them now. Eventually, you'll get the confidence to make them stick. It's better than plowing to someone's gearbox, right? So,
yeah, exactly. Raikkonen is stuck between the two Force Indias, and he's called into the pits to go onto the Super Softs. That's slowly becoming a potential strategy. Magnussen under investigation for the VSC overtake on Stroll. I think it was on Stroll to move up. Ricciardo goes into pits. He's going on the softs. So another potential strategy. One thing I really liked is everyone's on different tyres. No, there was not a clear agenda going on. There's not a clear
that
option
was the
tire.
Thing.
And yeah, it was everyone was on different tires at different points. So that was really interesting to see.
Yeah, no, for sure. And especially when I saw Ricciardo put the softs on, I was praying and praying and praying that the super soft would just give up.
Yeah. I mean, the super softs and softs seem to be pretty similar in terms of their performance in the end. But it was good to have that unknown during the race day, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. But they are too similar. They really are too similar.
Yeah, we did see that. By the end, it became pretty clear.
Yeah.
They thought maybe the weather was going to have an effect because it was hotter in the race. But yeah, worked out well for Ricciardo, and anyone else sort of started looking at him as a model for what your tyre strategy could be for the weekend.
Yeah. And hell, they were actually going to pit Lewis onto the softs as well. But I didn't hear why, but he changed decisions at the last minute.
They were looking at Ricciardo for that exact reason. Like, look, he's doing pretty well. That might be an option for you. But I think it was just a matter of he lasted so long on those ultras that he could get away with just putting on the supers and not having any potential issues.
Yeah.
Vettel is pretty far down the order, but he's making up places past Hülkenberg. He goes past Stroll shortly after. And then up front, Hamilton and Bottas, they're streaming ahead still.
Yeah, no, Mercedes was pretty much untouchable this weekend. Yeah.
Do you think Verstappen was going to come second if his car didn't break down?
I reckon he could have held off
Bottas.
I think he could have, but I'm not sure.
I think the podium was his if he stayed in there. I just don't think he was going to come second.
No, podium for sure. I think he could have pulled off second, maybe, but considering Ricciardo's pace difference to Bottas,
it's hard to say.
The Red Bull didn't look on song enough.
Not quite.
But, yeah.
Raikkonen goes past Alonso. He's also making up the places that he's lost. So, the Ferraris, although a terrible start, really, for those guys, they are getting back into it. Vettel passing Magnussen now. So, he's in 8th and Alonso just ahead of him. Alonso sat in 7th for quite some time.
He did.
He actually got up to 4th at one point, which was pretty impressive.
Amazing.
But, yeah, quickly lost that one out amongst the rest of the race.
You know what, guys? I might as well spoil it. He doesn't finish, okay? Like, oh my God, he's in 7th, he's in 4th. I'm getting people's hopes up. We are getting people's hopes up.
I thought he was having a good race. I didn't see that happening, especially that late in the race. But look, we'll get to it. Yeah, he was. Look, all I'm saying is for when he was on it, he was on it.
He's on it.
He was making the best out of a really shitty car there. McLaren were advising him things like, please avoid your short shifting between 3rd and 4th gears. And Alonso said back, I don't think I'm doing that. When do you think I'm doing that? He's being a real smartass now. Yeah. He's not taking anyone's shit. Not even the Honda guy's shit. Like, his own team. They're asking him, please be gentle on those on the gears. And he's like, I'm not even doing that. You know? He's pretty frustrated. It's clear in every one of his radio messages. As we said before, Ricciardo's pace on the softs tempting everyone, including Mercedes, to potentially change it up there. And Hamilton up the front, though, he's not really worried because he is putting in faster slaps on those old ultra softs. Magnussen gets a 5-second penalty for that earlier overtake under the VSC. This is where, as we said, Alonso's getting frustrated with McLaren. This is potentially my favourite piece of radio from the weekend. I don't know if you caught this one.
No, probably not.
I'll just bring it up now.
Out of this place is good. We're looking at plan A plus 5.
You are not giving me useful information. I need the pace of Magnussen. I need other things.
Yeah, so if you didn't catch that, basically his team said, your pace is really good. We're looking at your plan A plus 5, which probably just means, you know, your pit window plus 5 laps because you're doing really well. He says, this is useless information. I need to know where Magnussen is. One thing I got to say, and the commentators made a point of this, Alonso knows who he's racing at all times, and he's pragmatic, like he's realistic. He knows exactly who he needs to be worried about, and that's Magnussen 2 places behind him.
Mm.
That's who he thinks he can beat, or at least be near for the rest of this race.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't get to hear every bit of the radio, of course. So maybe they were giving them that information as well. But I just like his snappy response to his teammates, his engineers anyway.
Yeah. Well, he's getting over it, man, and so would I.
Bottas has pitted a little bit earlier. He's now struggling to get past Ocon. The Force Indies are becoming a real nuisance for a couple of people out there. The two pink cars, except towards the end maybe, they had a very promising weekend. Perez and Ocon, very talented drivers.
Even towards the end of the race, I thought they were going incredibly well.
Okay.
It's like, I don't know. Our problem is that we have to fight between ourselves for 4th and 5th. There are bigger problems to have.
Yeah, Force India had political problems as opposed to real race problems, I'd say.
Yeah, no, their car looked excellent. They are by far the strongest outside of the top three, well above Williams. I thought it was going to be another Force India v Williams battle for the whole season.
No, that doesn't look like the case.
They're well ahead.
At least for the foreseeable future of this season. Hamilton and Ocon are still on their ultra softs, and we're like halfway through the race. They're not having any issues. They're putting in awesome times. They look like they can just make this a one stop. But even anyone else who pitted earlier, they're all trying to go for the one stop. Degradation this weekend. It's a very fuel hungry track, but it's not damaging to their tires.
No,
obviously.
It's not. And also, do you reckon we should rename the tires? Like, instead of ultra soft, we have like super hard, ultra hard, slightly less hard. You know,
all variations
and then
are very hard.
Stone,
right?
Essentially, is the bottom one. Well, I think that would be much more descriptive.
The hard tires are not going to get used this season.
Oh God, no!
There's no point for them. Everyone's pretty much made their stops in the top 10. The leaders, basically, Hamilton, Bottas, Ricciardo, Perez, Raikkonen, Ocon, Vettel, Alonso in 8th, Hülkenberg and Kvyat. So Kvyat is, I don't think he's taken his drive-through, obviously, because he's still sitting in the points technically, but he obviously hasn't taken his drive-through.
I'll be honest, I was not even taking notice of him at all.
I wrote him off. I was like, whatever, Kvyat's had a shit rake, shit weekend. It's only going to get worse because the officials give him a 10-second penalty because the original penalty was incorrect and he hasn't already taken his drive-through.
Right.
So he hadn't taken his drive-through. He's in 10th. But they've confused him and his team. They've all made a strategy to like, shit, okay, you have to do a drive-through. They're trying to work out how they can do it. And then the last minute, they're like, oh, don't worry, you actually now have to do a 10-second penalty, which means as you go in for your pit stop, you've got to wait 10 seconds before you can get your tires changed.
10-second stop and go, right? Or you can add the time to your total race time after the race.
Yeah, but he hadn't made a stop at all yet, so he needs to do it during his next stop. I think shortly after that is when we start hearing some colourful words from Kvyat. I'm not going to play that team radio because Formula One seem to have removed it from a few different places because it's not exactly the kindest words from Kvyat's mouth. Did you hear it?
No, I didn't.
You didn't catch it?
I didn't catch it.
All right, so what's a word that in Australia we don't find that offensive but the rest of the world thinks absolutely horrible? Starts with C, ends in something interesting. I'm not going to say it. This is a child-friendly... Well, not really that child-friendly.
Carrot?
Podcast. Yeah, carrot. He called everyone at F1 carrots. This is a effing circus. Charlie Whiting, he called them all out. Race control is an effing circus. This is a joke. I kind of see that being a little bit fair enough.
A little bit, but also a little bit not.
Immature. I think, it was... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to put it. It was a fair assessment on the point of view that like they've really stuffed up my race. You know, he's frustrated. He's had a bad weekend. You can tell that even before he's had these issues with race control. They give him the wrong penalty, and then they fix that by giving him a lesser penalty. It stuffed up his entire race.
It did stuff up his entire race, yeah.
Which was already going badly. I can understand the frustration. If F1 obviously didn't want that clip out there because at least one place I've seen it taken down. But they shouldn't have broadcast it if they didn't want it out there.
Yeah, and again, what the hell is so offensive about carrots anyway?
Yeah.
But seriously, though, Kvyat, he needs to understand where he is in his career. He's got kicked out of the top-line Red Bull team. He's been given a reprieve by getting a drive at Toro Rosso. Yelling at the race stewards isn't going to impress anyone.
No, Vettel's the only one that can get away with that, clearly, from last year.
Yeah, or Hamilton.
Yeah, they can get away with bloody murder.
Yeah, well, they're driving gods. Kvyat is not a driving god. He's a driving kind of deity, in a sense.
So we'll see if Formula One manage, or, you know, the race control give him any further penalty or any further fines.
I think Charlie will
kind
just
of
pull
discipline.
Him aside.
Just a little chat. Definitely not on, apparently. Like, even his team. Apparently, there are rumors that I saw on Twitter that he even read... Toro Rosso were telling him, like, you can't do that shit. Like, we're not going to let you do that in the future.
Yeah, no, you can't. You really can't.
The race is sort of settling down. There's a couple of good battles going on. Ricciardo said that it's really hard to lean on his tyres. He's having some issue in sitting nice and comfortably in third, but I got a little nervous around here that he was struggling a little bit, especially with... Force India right in his mirrors.
Yeah, look, that was only about 4 or 5 laps after he put the softs on, though. So I think it just took a little more time to get them in, but then his pace seemed to come back up a little bit.
He steadied himself nicely.
And he steadied himself.
Vettel is behind all the Force Indias. He's been told, your race starts in the last 8 laps. You can take him in the last 8 laps. Just stick with him. They're hoping that Perez and Ocon's tyres do start to wear out a little bit.
Yep, and obviously Vettel's goal being Ricciardo's current third place.
Exactly. He still thinks it's possible. bit of an ask, but he thinks it's possible. This is when we get the Force India politics going on, because Ocon says to his team, I can take Ricciardo. He's on the slightly newer tyres than his teammate Perez in front of him in fourth. Yeah. He thinks that if Perez lets him through, he can take Ricciardo. Perez disagrees. He thinks he can take Ricciardo, or at the very least, he's not giving up the place.
That was a nice way to say what Sergio was going on about. Please, let us race. Please. I'm like, why are you begging?
You do a good whining voice. He doesn't let him pass. I think that's fair enough in one aspect. They were kind of trying to say, look, what we're going to do is Ocon's going to pass you. He's going to have an attempt on Ricciardo. If he can't do it, we're going to swap back. And it's just like, fuck, that's not right. That, to me, that's beyond just let him pass. To me, team orders, I don't mind if Force India said definitively, Perez, Ocon's on newer tyres, he can take Ricciardo, get out of the way.
Yeah.
I do not like the whole, okay, what we're going to do is you're going to go in front of him, you're going to go for Ricciardo. If you can't do it in, say, five laps, you're going to drop back and Perez is going to... It's like, that's team orders to my, you know, that's too many team orders.
That's too many.
Yeah. I don't mind team orders to a very specific extent of the race, the head engineer, the team principal has made an executive decision that Ocon has a chance here. Ocon probably does have a chance. It might not be a good one, but he has a better chance than Perez here. I think if someone there is able to make a definitive decision that's not going to affect the entirety of the race, it's not going to affect anyone else on other teams behind them, I think it's a fair call for them to make. But they stuffed around so long deciding who was a more important person to piss off, or, you know, not piss off,
not
between
piss
the
off,
two.
Yeah. But they cost them. I think in this case, I have a kind of devil on one shoulder, angel on the other situation. Mm. Or in this case, it's a team principal and a driver on each of my shoulders. You're the driver's saying, fuck off, basically. If you can get past me, get past me. And if you can get past me, then go for Ricciardo. Mm. But if you can't pass me, then what the hell thinks you have the right to go for a Red Bull? A faster car than our car, right? Number one. Now the team principal, which is, I want to maximize team points. He's faster than you. Mm. Get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, for the team principal, his logic is, if he gets past Ricciardo, that's a few extra points. Yep. If he doesn't, I get the same amount of points for Force India.
Exactly.
So I can understand why he should be making that decision. I don't mind it from that point of view. Maybe I'd mind it if it was, say, Verstappen and Ricciardo, and because I'm a bigger Ricciardo fan.
Yeah, no
that,
shit.
I'd be like, fuck that. You can't do that. This is racing. I don't know. It's Force India, so I'm not too bothered as to who are the two finishers in front of each other.
Believe
so.
Me, man. When Webber was fighting Vettel for 4 years, I was not a proponent of team orders. Put it
neither
that way.
Was, neither was Webber.
Yeah.
With some good footage there if you ever want to look it up.
One other thing.
Yep.
Romain Grosjean
needs
to shut the hell up.
I love their team radio.
That was a little bit much, but
seriously. Him and Haas's team radio. Wasn't it in Spain where he was like, he just made a simple comment like, the tyres are being a little bit funny, or like, is that the right call there? And his team engineer comes over, it's like, all right, calm down. Everyone, calm down. Like, and it was a similar one today where he's like, what the hell's going on? And they're like, Grosjean, you must calm down. You must chill. It's just, everything is so dramatic from either end of the Haas pit wall and their drivers. I love it.
Yeah,
I don't mind that he's going a bit crazy in there, because it means his the guys at Haas respond in kind. I like it.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of like soap opera-ish.
Yeah, it's over the top. It's definitely over the top.
It's definitely over the top.
Everything's a very big deal.
Anyway, let's keep
Vettel
going.
Vettel is past Raikkonen. So if I haven't already mentioned, Vettel is moving way up. He's right behind the Force Indias now, and they're still discussing who should be overtaking who. while Alonso is right on the tail of Stroll, and they are battling for ninth place. So this is late in the race. Like, we are lap 64, and Alonso is right up in there.
You know what the really stupid thing about the two Pink Panthers is at this stage? That Ocon had lost the tyre advantage he had at the start.
Yeah, they're still discussing it, even though the fact that even if he took over now,
he's not
going to go.
The pace.
He's not. It's all gone, and they're still discussing it.
They're
like,
still discussing it.
Well, but if I go over now, it's like, get over it. It's not happening. Anyway, Vettel goes off at turn 8 and 9 while he's trying to take one of the Panthers, Perez and Ocon, in the same turn, but gently brings it back in. They're still having a fight. Eventually, Vettel does get in front, taking fourth place. Two laps to go. Alonso pulls over to the runoff area. Engine blown. He gets out of the car angrily, does a similar sort of like raises his hands as he did as an Indy car, and then just climbs over and hung out with the fans for a little while.
Yeah.
I was pretty good of him to do that in what would have been a very frustrating moment of the race.
No, I can imagine, but I think maybe he just wanted to chill out with some fans, have a good time, as opposed to heading back to the garage and debriefing, because that debriefing would have been quite shit.
Yeah, he was not at all happy after that. But it was good of him to jump in with the fans. Everyone still loves him, clearly, because he got such a reception. But God, that's 2 laps to go and he would have got McLaren's first points.
Yeah, or 20 laps to go and possibly an Indy 500 victory. Hey, look at
that. Yeah, I'm focusing on the F1 here. I think this is even more heartbreaking than just because, you know, 2 laps. So close. Like, you can literally taste the finish line at that point. Vettel is, oh, sorry. Actually, Vettel hadn't passed Perez. He'd passed Ocon, but right after that, Vettel passes Perez into the chicane on the very last lap, or the penultimate lap, and they go over. Lewis Hamilton wins well ahead of everyone else. Bottas, Ricciardo finish up the podium, and then the Force Indias finish up behind Vettel after their discussion. They, you know what? Maybe if they'd just done this properly and Ocon got in front of Perez, maybe they would have at least had Vettel behind Ocon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe that would have been their best possible scenario, even if they couldn't get... Anyway. So, yeah, that was the Canadian Grand Prix. Then we have the podium, of course.
Oh, the podium.
It was a good podium.
It was a great podium. I don't know if any of our listeners or anything watch Star Trek, but I am a gigantic nerd and I love Star Trek. And the celebrity on the podium doing all the interviews and stuff was Sir Patrick Stewart. Some of you may know him as Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, so he does a little discussion with Valtteri Hamilton. Pretty friendly, but when he gets to Ricciardo, that's when it gets really good.
Of course.
Ricciardo says, oh, I'm hearing something from the crowd. One second, I've got to do this. And he does a shoey. I don't even think he was expecting him to want to do the shoey with him.
No.
But he kind of says, do you want one? And he goes, oh, yeah. All right. Gets his other shoe off, pours him one, and he takes it like a champ.
He does. I'm pretty sure he actually asked for it as well.
Yeah, he was like, if I'm on the podium, I'm doing a shoe.
Yeah, if I'm at the podium, I'm doing one. He's like, what? Are you serious? Because, he finished his shoe and just pegged his shoe off the podium.
Is he a big F1 fan? I'm not really sure. He's a big motorsport fan. I noticed the interviewing wasn't that great until he did the shoey, in my opinion. Like, I was just really happy to see him up there. His voice was so amazing. He's like, I'm a classically trained Shakespearean actor. And how are you, Mr. Valtteri? Like, it was very uncomfortable. And then the shoey happened. I was like, oh, it's all forgiven. That's the best podium. That's the best podium of the year.
Watching Patrick Stewart drink out of a shoe was a bit too amusing. Like, I found it a little too amusing, I'll be honest with you.
The only other thing I got to note is that there was a guy walking in the fans, like running to the podium, carrying a full tire, like over his shoulder. The tire without the I think he got it from a tire wall. I don't think it was an F1 tire.
Right.
But he's just running down the track with a tire on his shoulder.
Right.
I wonder if he got that home. Another person got a Ferrari Challenge Cup wheel home with him. I saw that on Reddit. I don't know if I'm sure the marshals wouldn't have let him do that. Like, we saw it in Australia. People were trying to pick up bits of car. Like, no, excuse me, sir. You're going to have to leave that there. Like, you're not going to take half of a Force India wing with you.
But Australian marshals are super strict.
Yeah.
About everything.
I guess it's dependent on where you are. I don't know how the Canadian Grand Prix deals with those. Do you want to get into some news then?
No, let's go through our predictions, man.
News. Sorry, you're right. How did we go? You didn't do too badly. Your podium was Bottas, Hamilton, Vettel. So, all wrong order, but two of them were there. I did a little bit better because I said Hamilton would win. I said Vettel would come second, which was wrong, but Bottas third, so I technically beat you out on the podium. Fastest lap, you said Hamilton, I said Vettel. I probably should have found out who actually did the fastest lap before I worked out.
The fastest lap this weekend was by Lewis Hamilton with a 1:14.551, wasn't even remotely close to the lap record set by Rubens Barrichello back in 2004. Of 1:13.622.
That's so far off.
A big gap, man.
I thought it would be maybe like... I thought we were going to take the record, but that's massive. What about, we had a prediction on who would get taken out by the Wall of Champions. You said Stroll, I said Palmer. Neither of them got taken out at all.
No, they both did really well.
I think Palmer did pretty average, but...
Well, I mean, for Palmer, he did really well.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I finished 11th. Safety cars, you said 1, I said 0, so you got me on that one.
Boom.
Overall, your predictions were a little bit better, but I'm going to take it because... I got Hamilton correct.
You're going to take it because you're reading them out and...
Yep.
Yep, cool. All right.
We'll get into some news.
Yeah, let's do it. All righty. So, Mercedes setup woes. We came into this weekend with Mercedes not really having any setup to use the ultrasofts and even the supersofts properly. Mm. They had 24-hour-a-day, engineers on the job for 10 consecutive days.
Yeah, I saw that. They were working shifts to fix this up. Yep. And they certainly did because they get a 1-2
they did
in
do
Canada.
It.
Hopefully this doesn't mean, as we said before, that this is the rest of the season is they're good to go and they're going to destroy it.
Well, look, very well might be because Bottas actually explained what the issue was in the first place.
Mm.
He said, I think definitely most of it's set up and getting the car into a nice, stable condition, having it well balanced. Having the front and rear axle nicely balanced through all the corners, that makes the tyres work well and last well. So I think a lot of it will come from that.
Mm.
He doesn't think anything is fundamentally wrong with the car. And this weekend, we saw Hamilton lasting on those ultrasofts. We didn't really see any tyre issues at all for them, which is scary.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it depends on the track. Obviously, Canada's always been good for them, so hopefully this is just an indication that they got their setup right this weekend. We'll see what happens in 2 weeks in Azerbaijan or Baku. We'll see what happens there. But hopefully it's not the rest of the season done and dusted.
Indeed.
That's the only thing we can ask.
Sorry to any Azerbaijanis out there who heard that just then.
What, my pronunciation?
Yeah.
I thought I said it kind of okay. I'm just going to call it Baku. Let's just
call it Baku.
What do they usually call it? They just called it the European Grand Prix.
The European Grand Prix, yeah.
Broad definition.
Ridiculous.
Broad definition of European. I've got a little bit of a story here. So James Allen on Twitter has basically said, I'm standing at the center corner of the Canadian Grand Prix, logged into the free Wi-Fi here for the fans on the F1 fans in this grandstand, and there is a trial that they are testing out, which you can live stream the event from your seat on your phone when you're connected to the grandstand Wi-Fi.
Nice.
I guess this ties into another story I saw, which was F1 and Liberty Media getting together a small team of media experts and things to look into some streaming options. So early, but I think if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Liberty Media, not Bernie's F1. Get some sort of streaming access available to the F1 fans out there who don't want to pay in Australia, Foxtel or cable providers overseas to get every race as it happens.
For sure. I think it is going to happen, man. Mm. I just think we'll have to wait for all the current cable contracts to be up.
Okay.
So it's about 2021, I think.
Sure. I think it's also probably country specific.
It is.
But, I mean, there are other sports out there who have managed to do this even with cable contracts in their current forms.
For sure.
I know the NBA, they're probably doing one of the best in the world. Like, you subscribe to the NBA, you get every single game from every team, or you can subscribe at different levels. Like, it's just, they've done it so well, and that's without pissing off any of their cable providers. So if anyone can do it, I think Liberty Media are indicating that they're probably smart enough to get something done. So that's exciting, and it's good that they were doing a test on the day. If you're not near a screen, you can just jump on your phone or your iPad on the Wi-Fi and watch the race as you're there.
It's awesome. I wonder how it went.
He said this was he said it was working on his phone, but I don't know how it went for like the entire crowd for the whole race. So, do you have another story for us?
I do. Okay, so this story isn't exactly a story. It's more of a rumor, but I like rumors, so we'll just get into
it. We'll just call it a story. Let's like this is fact.
This is backmarker absolute fact. Unquestionable fact.
What is it?
Rumor. McLaren and Mercedes have a deal in place for 2018 already.
I heard this rumor as well. They were talking about it in the commentary, actually, that there was some backroom meetings going on between heads of McLaren, heads of Mercedes, engine. What do you? I heard we talked about it like 2 weeks ago. Like the deadline is done. They have to be with Honda next year.
Like, no, we didn't.
By the deadline.
But remember what we also said.
Deadlines mean shit.
Deadline. Well, they don't mean shit, but they don't mean everything.
Sure.
I've seen weirder things happen, as I said.
Yeah. I can see it happening. I don't doubt that it could happen. I just...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't necessarily want it to happen. I'd rather see them go well with Honda. Or better. Not necessarily... I don't see them doing well, but at least better.
Yeah, well, they might do a little better. But I don't think they're ever going to win. And that's... the thing, really. They approached Mercedes around the start of April.
Okay, so
around
this is,
the start of April. Honda and McLaren approached them because they wanted a transfer of technology. The deal fell apart partly because Force India were hostile to the idea, but also because Honda were reluctant to receiving help from a competitor.
What you're saying, they could have potentially had a deal done if they got stuff a little bit sorted quicker, less resistance before the deadline.
But no, that's the thing. It would have been a deal for Mercedes to supply technology to Honda.
Oh, okay.
Mercedes would help Honda develop their own engine.
Right.
Honda did not like that. And there's a very Japanese sense of pride in a lot of their work. And trust me when I say that would not have gone down well.
Okay, speaking of the Japanese sense of pride with the Honda stuff, I'm going to just play you a quick clip.
Go for it.
This is basically some questions directed at Honda and asking, what do you think of where you're at now and some improvements that could potentially be happening, and what Alonso thinks of the whole lot. So
it's very natural that we are frustrated about the current performance, and they are frustrated so as well. So the... there's no wonder they are complaining about the performance situation. It is, you don't trust us, but it's getting better. So, and especially reliability point of view, we are thinking it is just a time frame issue. So that with some moment, I think we can cover out everything.
Last thing, Mr.
So now they ask Alonso, Honda think we're getting better. What do you think?
Last thing, Mr. Azegawa just told us that he feels that Honda improves. Do you feel the same?
No.
Well, that was pretty like... Yeah.
So yeah. It's a very Japanese of, look, I understand they're frustrated, but don't worry, we're on it. We are improving. Everything is doing really well. Alonso, what do you think?
No. No.
Oh, that's great.
Holy crap. But anyway...
sorry, I couldn't help but interrupt for that amazing clip. Anyway, continue. What were you saying?
So Honda are actually working with a company called Ricardo on their electronics.
Ricardo,
yeah.
Right,
yeah. A company called Ilmor, which is who actually makes the engine for Chevy in IndyCar.
Right, yep.
They also helped Renault at one point in time. So they're working with Mario Ilian on the internal combustion part of it. McLaren's patience has essentially run out. Even with all of these contractors, they no longer have faith in Honda. And what they're actually going to try to do is force Honda to quit. Because that deadline has passed, remember? But if the engine manufacturer pulls out...
They have to fund, they don't have to pull out because they've got Sauber.
They have Sauber now, don't they?
So they're not going to be like, all right, cool, we're just going to let our bigger team go and we'll just rock a Sauber... put our engine in a Sauber car. They're not going to be able to kick him out of Formula One.
My next note is, divorce will be messy.
Yeah.
Honda has a long-term deal and contribute $100 million per year to McLaren's budget.
Yeah, they're the primary... Are they the biggest sponsor?
They probably are.
Probably the biggest sponsor. Huge Honda logos all
no
over
one else
car.
Wants to sponsor McLaren right now.
Funnily enough, because
enough.
Of the engine.
Yeah, I know.
It's a vicious cycle on itself.
Yeah, also Alonso is much more likely to stay at McLaren if they switch to Mercedes as well.
Mm.
So if they want to keep the two great drivers they have now, Van Dorn, I still have faith in you. You're a great driver for now. But if they want to keep those drivers next year, they will need to put something more competitive in front of him.
Sure. I don't see, even if they go to Mercedes next year and they're more competitive, I don't see him winning. Like, I don't see Alonso winning first year with a new engine. Like, there's going to be a little bit of teething. Even though it might be a huge improvement from Honda, there's going to be teething issues. So I don't think Alonso is going to get the dramatic improvement he needs to win. He just might be enough to get him through. I don't know.
I honestly reckon he would win races.
Oh, well, yeah. No. I'm talking championship. Yeah.
Championship. If anyone can do it, it's him.
And McLaren.
Yeah, and McLaren.
Okay.
Because honestly, that chassis is really good.
Mm.
It's really good.
That would be very exciting because hopefully it means next year we've got 3, maybe 4 competitive teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, let's not get our hopes up. I got a little excited.
We've been saying that forever.
Yeah.
So probably not.
Maybe one day.
Your story.
Yes, let's see what I've got for you. Ross Brawn. He's made a comment that he basically says F1 needs to reassess whether or not they need to make F1 cars road relevant or relevant to the car industry. He is in charge of a lot of the decisions that are going to be made going forward in Formula One's sort of direction. He's saying move away from the idea that our cars need to be the reason manufacturers want to be in this sport, which is you know, manufacturing information, industry information for their road cars. What do you think about this, Rush?
Dude, I actually have that same story here on my notes. I think it's right. I mean, if you look at the direction that road cars are taking now, which is all about fuel efficiency, it's about hybrid power, it's about nothing to do with F1, essentially.
Yeah, more electric cars, moving away from racing cars.
Exactly.
Really, yeah.
And we've tried moving towards that hybrid kind of system, and what do we have? We have extremely incredible, technologically speaking, engines.
And very expensive ones.
But very expensive.
Yeah.
And we've essentially destroyed any hope independent teams have of competing. But I do have a big quote here from Ross Brawn that I really wanted to say because it's quite relevant. So this is what Ross Brawn has to say. There is a slightly worrying gap between the front and the middle of the field that we need to pay attention to. We are still starting to understand the behavior of these cars with regard to how well they can race each other. We have just initiated our aerodynamic program to look at the design of these cars and see what we can do in the future to make them more raceable. That's something we're working with the FIA with, and they're actually starting a research program together. And Brawn also says that the close racing issue did not entirely focus on overtaking, and there was a drive to maintain current downforce levels while also improving the spectacle. Now, what does that mean, you think? Less aerodynamic rules with the same amount of downforce. There's only one thing that will do that.
Ground effects?
Ground effect.
All right.
Ground effect.
I think we're going to be talking about that a little bit in the next episode, next week, in the downtime between a race. But
okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is going to be some changes from Ross Brawn and moving towards these kind of comments of we need to move away from road relevancy.
Yeah.
We're going to see some big changes.
For sure.
We don't need to discuss, oh, that engine might not help these manufacturers with their cars. Like, get rid of that conversation and focus on what Formula One can do to be better.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have another story for us?
I do. So, as we all know, come 2021, we're going to be having different engine regulations in Formula One. There's actually not a rumor, it's a fairly substantiated claim that the leading candidate for the next Formula One engine...
Let me guess, Audi?
Not the actual manufacturer, we're talking about the kind of formula behind the engine.
Oh, okay, right.
So instead of this single turbo V6 with MGUH, MGUK... which essentially means it pulls energy from the brakes and energy from the turbo and turns it back into electricity, which they feed
to
essentially
into
the battery, and they can feed that directly into the drive shaft.
Yeah.
Instead of that, they're going to have a V6 twin turbo with standard KERS. I don't know if you remember what KERS
is. Yeah, I kind of know KERS from like watching race reviews from previous years. The other thing I know about KERS is that Formula One Race Stars like go-kart game. Where you get KERS on the like boost pads.
Yeah.
So much fun. That's totally irrelevant to real Formula One, but
yeah, wow.
I kind of know what KERS is.
Okay. So
you press
KERS
the button and your little guy goes.
No, it's true. It's a kinetic energy recovery system. So essentially it is the MGUK.
Yeah.
In the current
but
formula.
But they get to control
engines.
When it
exactly.
basically triggers on the track. So
exactly.
Do you reckon that means we're going to move away from things like DRS or in unison with things like DRS?
Well, see, Liberty wants to move away from DRS, so I think that will happen. Ross Brawn has said, I don't like it. I don't like the look of it. It's not pure. It's not real racing. Mm. But that being said, if they can't get the cars close enough together, they'll keep the DRS.
I don't mind DRS this year. Like, it bothered me last year. I felt it a little bit artificial last year. This year, it's not bothering me so much. It was a little annoying in China, but, I mean... I thought from the amount of times it made people close without just being an easy overtake outweighed the negative of just like, oh, press the button to overtake. Like, that happened a few times, but the way it actually brought people together and then made them have an overtaking chance at the end of the straights,
when it worked, it does actually work.
Exactly. I think it makes it worth it if they can get it to work more than it doesn't.
But that being said, if you had cars that were close enough together so they could pass each other without having to use DRS,
that's
obviously better.
That's the goal. See if it's possible, I guess.
It will be possible, and especially with ground effect. Keep that term in your mind until next week.
You're
going
to say it every. You're going to say it every episode till 2021.
Ground effect. And yes, you're right. Ground effect.
My story?
Yep.
McLaren won a race. I don't know if you saw this. McLaren actually won a race.
Are you high?
No, were you not paying attention? They won the raft race in Montreal.
Oh, yeah, they did too.
They won the raft race. So their first race win since Brazil 2012.
Oh, my God.
Basically, all the teams get together. They've got to build a raft and then race across the water that's on the island that the track is located in Montreal. And McLaren's team put together the best raft and they actually won. It's been a few years since they've done this rough race. Say that 10 times fast.
Rough race.
It's been a while
race.
Since they've done this race, and McLaren took out top step of the podium.
Yeah.
So, congratulations.
I assume they didn't have a Honda outboard on that thing, though.
No, it's a rough. They got to use paddles, so no engine.
Oh, that's why they won.
They won. Alonso did say that if they didn't have a car that was winning by September, that he was going to leave. Does this count? You reckon?
Well, he said, no, because if he said he doesn't have a car.
Actually, I don't know what he said.
I'm pretty sure he said, as long as we're winning by September. He didn't say the team. He didn't even say anything. He said
McLaren
as long
had
as
a
we're
meeting.
Winning.
They had a meeting and they're like, all right, guys, we're going to lose and we've got to win something. Someone, what do we got? What do we got? Oh, we got the Ralph race. Jim, you're a genius. Everyone, start training for that. Fuck the race. Start training for that.
But, dude, that's another cool Liberty thing. They brought back the Raft race.
Yeah,
that's
very
so
good.
Friggin' cool.
I actually did not think I was going to watch the whole thing. It's like 25 minutes, but I got
you
caught up.
You actually watched it all.
I skipped through a bit, but it was actually pretty fascinating, especially the end. Like, it was pretty close. It was good. Good fun. And a few of the teams, I think Sauber especially, I think it was Sauber, theirs just basically sunk.
Nice.
Yeah, not too good on their front.
Uh-huh. Anyway, I have one more story.
One more story? All right.
Okay, so I have a quote here from Cyril Abiteboul, and those of you who don't know who he is, essentially the head of Renault Sport, the people who make, obviously, the Renault engine. He's saying there will be no major Renault update, in other words, no new Renault engine until 2018.
So the Red Bull Racing team engine, as well as the works team,
as well as the
update.
Works team, will not be updated, have a major update anyway. Until next year.
So, obviously, their reliability that was meant to be fixed by Canada, not going to happen for the year? Or?
The reliability things are a little different. What he's talking about is, you know, a really big update that will increase reliability, will increase the power, will increase everything. They're going to be bringing updates to the engine at every single race, as every team does, but...
Nothing that substantial.
Nothing substantial, essentially.
That seems like a big jump. I mean, they were originally going to do it a couple of races ago, then they pushed it to Canada. Wouldn't they push it out to maybe like the mid-season break?
Yeah.
Not at all. They're just giving up on the idea, obviously.
Yeah, well, it must have been a bit of bull because, wow.
We're going to go, that news is over. You ruined the news.
Well, it was a bit of bull. God.
Oh, God. All right. That's pretty much all my stories. I'm going to give a little bit of a quiz for you. So I'm going to give you a second to refresh. Are you ready to go through the quiz? All right, Raj, to wrap up this week's episode, I'm going to give you 10 questions. They're all based on the Canadian Grand Prix, the track, the races, basically a little bit of history. No real rhyme and reason to this. It's not like all old school, all new school. It's a bit of everything. So let's see how you go. You got 10 questions. Yeah. I might award some half points, we'll say. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, question one. Wait, before I start this, I need to ask you. I should have asked you off mic.
What?
How do you say Villeneuve? Is it Villeneuve?
Villeneuve.
Okay, I'm pretty happy with that. And Jacques Villeneuve and Gilles and Jacques. Yeah. Gilles and Jacques Villeneuve, because they appear once or twice in this, and I don't want to fuck up his name every time.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Jacques Villeneuve raced in 10 Grand Prix in his home race of Canada. How many times did he finish on the podium in Montreal? So 10 races, how many times did he finish on the podium?
I'm going to go with 3.
One? Yes, one. Only one. It was in 1996.
Right.
So not a huge amount of hometown success.
Mm.
Great racer, but not a huge amount of hometown success.
Yeah, there you go.
So wrong on that one. Nigel Mansell famously lost the victory in 1991 in Canada after his car grounded to a halt on the final lap. You remember this, of course. It's very funny footage.
I ain't that old.
Okay, 91. Well, I wasn't born then.
Yeah, it's true.
but I've seen the footage. Here's the actual question, though. Who inherited the win after that?
Ooh.
I'll give you a bonus mark if you can tell me who it was and what team it was for.
Okay. I'm gonna go Senna.
Do you want to go with the team just to see if you can get a bonus point? 91.
If it wasn't a Williams, I'm guessing, then it would have been either McLaren or Ferrari.
No,
it's
you're wrong. Wrong on all fronts. It was Nelson Piquet in a Benetton.
In a Benetton.
All right, so that was way off.
That was terrible.
Name three champions that crashed out in the 1999 race into the Wall of Champions. So it's the most times champion drivers crashed out in a single race on the Wall of Champions. I'll give you a mark for each one you can get.
Right,
so three in one race. All right, one, done, good.
Jacques Villeneuve?
Yes.
And, who's the last one?
Shouldn't have made this three marks.
Who's the last one? Villeneuve, Schumacher, Damon Hill.
Oh, 3 of 3. Good job.
Boom!
This one's a little more recent. In 2008, which driver accidentally ran into the back of Kimi Raikkonen's Ferrari at the end of the pit lane? Not even on the track. Pit lane.
Wait, which year was it?
2008.
2008.
In the pit lane, ran into the back of Raikkonen's
Ferrari.
Oh
my God, I remember this. I remember this incident. Who was it?
You can see it in your mind's eye.
2008.
tick tock, tick tock, tick tock.
It can't be Robert Kubica because he won the 2008 race, I'm pretty sure.
So, I actually don't know that. I only researched who crashed into
Raikkonen. Crashed into who? I'm going to go with Lewis Hamilton.
Good job.
Nice.
Nice. All right. Question number five. Which team holds the most record for most victories in Canada with 13 wins?
Which team?
Yeah. I could have got this one.
No, you could have got this
one. I actually knew this one.
McLaren.
Yes, good job. Three venues have hosted the Canadian Grand Prix besides Montreal.
Yep.
We also have Mont Tremblant.
Yep.
And one other. What is that other?
It's like, it sounds like Massport or Mosport or...
I'm going to give it to you. It's Mosport or Mos... Yeah, Mosport or Mosport.
Mosport.
It's definitely Mosport.
Okay.
Yes. Mosport, I think is how you... Anyway. Yeah. Question seven. In what year did the man... Wait, I've wrote this question really weird. By the way, I stole a lot of these questions from like the Bernie era F1 website, some of these. So they're really weirdly done. Not to Liberty's standard of online content, I got to say.
Yeah.
wow, this is ridiculous. In what year did the man after whom the Montreal circuit is named, Gilles Villeneuve, score his only Grand Prix victory in Canada? What year? Basically, this is a ridiculous question. What year did Gilles Villeneuve score his only Canadian Grand Prix
1979.
Victory? 1979. Oh, I'm going to give you half because it's 78.
Ah, come on.
That's pretty close, but it's also the first time
I know they
it was
renamed
held.
The track in 82.
Well, it was the first time that it was actually raced in Montreal in 1978, which is the only time he won, and then they named it after him a couple of years later.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Which French driver celebrated a season best finish of fifth in 2001 Canadian Grand Prix? And then performed several donuts and threw his helmet into the crowd. It's quite famous footage from the Canadian Grand Prix history archives, apparently.
Which French driver?
So really, basically, who's finished fifth who was French in 2001 and he was so happy that he did a bunch of donuts and threw his helmet straight into the crowd? Again, this is one of those Bernie era website F1 questions. I'm sorry. It's a really weird one. Who's
I'm
a French driver
I'm
from 2001?
Yeah. I can't think.
You can pass. You can make up the next two questions if you want.
Fuck no. Can you give me the team? No, that's easy. Yeah, I don't know.
Jean Alesi. Alesi. Is that how you say it? All right.
Yeah.
These are before my real
fine.
F1 fan years.
I wasn't telling
years,
you
so,
how to say
these,
it.
These are my like before F1 fan years. So some of these names, I'm like, Villeneuve? I think I know that one. Yeah. Anyway, no points there, unfortunately. Question nine. In the 21st century of the Grand Prix in Canada, only one year has been missed on the calendar due to financial troubles. Oh, okay. That was a little easy for you. Shit. All right. That was a pretty easy one. Last question. Jenson Button's famous victory in 2011 at the Canadian Grand Prix. Of course, you remember it. Hard-fought win from him. He won it on the very last corner. Who did he overtake to secure that victory?
Sebastian Vettel.
All right, the last two are too easy, obviously.
Woo!
All right, let me quickly tally these up. There were 10 questions, but they're worth different amounts. There was a potential for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 points. You've gone and got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and a half.
I passed.
8.5 out of 13. That's not bad. It's not bad at all. Yeah, the first two questions really threw you a little bit there, unfortunately. And that was worth 3 of those marks. So, not too shabby. Maybe you'll give me a quiz next week. I would not do that well, I got to say. I knew like 3 of those.
Yeah, well, shit. It was a really specific quiz this week.
Yeah.
And I like that, actually. Every single race, we're going
to
do that.
Cool. Let me do it. Give me one on Baku, because there's only like one race I have to study, basically.
Why would I question you about Baku?
Could you even come
what
up with 10 questions?
Ask you?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I think that is us for the week. We will be chatting next week, the race preview of Azerbaijan. Did I pronounce it right this time?
Yeah, remarkably close, actually.
All right, I'm pretty happy with that. Follow us on Facebook, Backmarker Podcast, Twitter, Backmarker Pod. Website is backmarkerpodcast.com. Raj, till next week.
I'll see you guys later.